This Rich Eisen Show podcast is sponsored by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and maybe even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here we go now.
So far, so good.
With guest host Jim Jackson.
I like it.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Get the duck boats ready. The Boston Celtics, they are the best team in the NBA.
I've been telling you since October. Best team in the NBA.
Earlier on the show, ESPN senior NBA writer Mark Spears. Coming up, basketball Hall of Famer Grant Hill. Contributing writer for The Atlantic, Jemele Hill. And now, sitting in for Rich, Jim Jackson.
Welcome, welcome back. This is, the next segment here is really special to me because this is, and I can say young man because I'm old, even though I got him by a few years. We go back to high school, playing in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, basketball tournament. Didn't get a chance to play against him in college, but played with him on our Pan Am team in 1991 that went down to Cuba, won a bronze, and then being able to follow his career throughout the NBA and his post-career on TV with, of course, Turner and CBS. So I got to welcome in the Hall of Famer, college and NBA. My guy, Mr. Grant Hill. How you doing, Grant?
I'm good, man. You conjured up some great memories of watching you at McCumber Whitney High School down in Myrtle Beach, where you absolutely dominated everybody in your way.
No, man, that was some good time. Just think about this, where we've been. That was 88, 89, bro. I mean, at that time, that was before AAU was like really big, but playing in those holiday tournaments, and Kenny Anderson, number one player in the country at that time, and our senior class was there. Is there something when you look back at that time in high school, when you were, because you were a sophomore at the time, coming through, that you could imagine all that you have gone through to get to this point in your life?
You know, that's a great question, Jim. And you know, I think for both of us, I mean, if we both go back to Myrtle Beach, you know, holiday of 88, and I don't know if I could have dreamed big enough to, you know, in terms of like what I wanted out of basketball versus what I was able to do and what you're able to do. I mean, it's been 35 years plus, and we've done some incredible things, and we're still doing it. We're still working in media. We're still around the game. I don't think I ever thought that big. You know, I just, at that time, it was, I loved the game. I wanted to beat you guys, which didn't happen, but, you know, wanted to see if I could go play in college and see if I could test myself against some of these great programs in college at that time. And I have far exceeded my expectations if I go back to 1988. I think we both have far exceeded our expectations. And how lucky are we that we were able to play for a long time, we're able to be around the game, we get to cover college basketball, we get to cover the NBA. I mean, you're doing the Rich Eisen Show. You know, you're doing something that's pretty spectacular as well. So it's just, to me, I'm just grateful, and I never imagined that this would happen, and I'm grateful that we're still able to be around the game in various ways.
Well, Grant, what does this say about the patience part? Because back then, it was a process you kind of had to go through in order to reach the ultimate goal if you were blessed to get there. It was your high school, pick your college, your 2, 3, 4 years in college, and then if that works out, patient enough to get through, then play in the NBA. Whereas in today's world, it's like, I want it right now. And you kind of lose a little bit of that, I don't know what the word I'm trying to explain is, but you lose something in there because you're trying to rush the process. But it says a lot about back then what we had to wait for and work for and how to get to it. And once we got it, did we appreciate it a lot more?
I think we did. I really do. And I think because of that, because of, you know, the AAU culture was a little bit different. You know, even the person of influence and when we were in high school was our high school coach. And oftentimes a high school coach is an educator. They've gone to college, so they care about the development of young people. You know, as we went into college, you know, I think you were in school for 2 years, 3 years.
3 years, yep.
3 years. I was there 4 years. I think when we came into the NBA, you had a greater foundation. You had the experience of being coached hard. You were a great player. I knew about Jim Jackson before I knew Jim Jackson. I read about you. You and Kenny Anderson were the cream of the crop in your class. And but, you know, it was a different time. You know, you had to kind of had to grind. You know, you weren't given anything. You weren't coddled. You had people still challenging you, coaching you, holding you accountable, pushing you to be the very best. And I don't know if young players today get that. I don't know if they're getting that even in the high school level. The money is so extreme, the potential windfall of success. So people now are looked at as a meal ticket. And I don't think that was necessarily the case as much back in the day. And so, look, the talent is great. The skill set for a lot of these players is great as well. But those hard moments, those tough times, those moments where you're pushed, those are the things now when I look back, I'm appreciative of and I value. And those are the moments of growth and opportunity. And so I think we're missing out on some of those steps. The talent's great, but that I don't know what that is either. I don't know what word you use to describe it. But I don't see that these kids today are getting that from their experience prior to making the NBA.
Well, Grant, you're down in Dallas covering the NBA Finals with NBA TV, and we're talking about level of maturity. And that brings up the point about Luka. And Luka spoke about this in his press conference, only 25 years old. And we gave Luka a lot of credit for being a lot more mature entering into the NBA at a young age, but there's still growth to be made, in particular his body language, his demeanor, how he handles officials. For you being on the ground and following Luka, what's the next level of maturity for him as it relates to not only his game, but how he approaches officials, defensively gets better, and continues to grow as a player?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. You know, I mean, you know, you've called games in Dallas, so you're very aware and seeing things up close in person there courtside. The talent of Luka Doncic is off the charts. And how he plays, how he thinks the game, how he plays at a certain pace, his scoring, his pass, like all of that, his instincts are absolutely incredible. I think two things. I think one, the maturity to and the gamesmanship that goes into interacting with officials. You know, you have to pick and choose your spots. If you're constantly getting on them and getting distracted and getting caught up in that game within the game, then you become a problem. And we've seen that for him in the regular season, but we've also seen it throughout the playoffs and even in this series. So I think if he can grow up from that standpoint, from a leader standpoint, not being caught up or consumed in that and just playing the game, I think that would help him and it'd help his teammates. And I think he's got to get in better shape. You know, I really do. I don't think he's committed and devoted himself to being in tip-top shape to where he can have the responsibility of the ball in his hands every possession, but then also be the target defensively. Teams are going to go at him. They should go at him. He's not the strongest player on the defensive end. And to have the endurance to handle the responsibility on defense and on offense, that's not there right now. Boston is exposing that. They're taking advantage of that. But if Luka can get in better shape, really commit to being conditioned in the best version of himself and not be caught up with the officiating, I think there's another level that he can get to. And that next level can help, you know, help Dallas win a championship. I really do believe that.
Are we not giving maybe the Celtics the credit they deserve defensively? I mean, this is not – Minnesota was the best defensive team on paper. They had a rim protector. This Boston team is built around defensive versatility. How much of that is a factor? Because each series, each opponent is different, and they're causing different issues, not just for Luka, but for Kyrie.
Well, you know, games and series are all about matchups. And yes, Minnesota was an elite defensive team, but a better matchup for Dallas, obviously. I think the defensive versatility that you alluded to, where you have multiple guys who can guard multiple positions. You know, Drew Holiday is not your traditional point guard on the defensive end. You can put him on anybody, and he's going to fight. He's going to make life difficult for you. Derek White, you know, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, they're capable. They have length and size, and they've learned how to become good defensive players. Obviously, Porzingis, he's been, you know, hurt the last few games. But, you know, Al Horford, even at his advanced age, he's switched out on Luka and switched out on Kyrie Irving and has held his own and made those guys work for tough shots. So the defensive versatility and the defensive intelligence of this Boston team, I think, hasn't been truly appreciated or respected. And quite honestly, I think this team really has been underrated. I mean, they've been number one all season, head and shoulders above everyone else. They've taken care of business the whole way. They've dominated this postseason. Like, really, I can't think of any other team on a championship run that has dominated like this Celtics team. And now they're on the verge of sweeping this Mavericks team. And it's like, wow, like, how did that happen? You know, this team is pretty incredible. And I don't think gets the credit or appreciation overall for what they've done. And let me tell you, Jim, if they can win tonight or win this series with the age of this roster, they have a lot of runway in front of them to really potentially put together multiple championships here in Boston with this group.
Well, I tell you, we always talk about youth and Jaylen Brown and, you know, Jason Tatum and being able to have that. Porzingis is still relatively young with regards to where he's at. But how about who's heading this thing up with Joe Mazzulla? Last year, it was, is it too much? Is he over his head? He doesn't have the experience. But he got thrown in a situation that's tough for even an experienced coach to be able to handle it. But then the narrative is, well, you have all this talent, so you should win. But it takes a little bit more game planning-wise, the attention to detail. And you know, Grant, it's just as difficult to coach talent as it is when you don't have talent. So the job that Joe Mazzulla has done this year is also, if I'm correct, been kind of underrated.
Oh, no question. No question. And you said it best last year. I think he was transitioned into the head coaching role like right before the start of the season. And so didn't really have the time to prepare for what that is and the responsibility that goes into that. But and maybe last year was criticized and did some things and was sort of learning the position on the fly. But I do think last season prepared him. And he is, you know, really just from day one has this group prepared. He's created a great culture. There's no issues, no problems. They play together. They play the right way. I think he has, you know, found that right balance between empowering guys, but then also holding them accountable, which is not always easy to do in today's game with today's generation. And he's made a lot of the right moves. And you're right, it's hard to coach talent. There's expectations in Boston. When he inherited this team, they just had come off their first finals visit as a core group. They had been to the Eastern Conference Finals a number of times. It was not an easy opportunity, if you will, for a first-time coach. But he has improved. He's settled in. I think he's now very, very comfortable. And once again, I think underappreciated, undervalued for the job that he's done with this group. They face some adversity. They've gone through some stuff this year, obviously, with the Porzingis situation. And these guys were ready. These guys were prepared, and these guys came out and took care of business there in game three.
Good stuff. And I want to transition just a little bit since I'm in L.A., the Lakers situation, and a family that you're very familiar with, which is the Hurley family. Dan Hurley got offered or got brought into L.A. to be offered to be in a position to take over as a head coach. How much do you stay in touch with the family? You know this more than anything, better than anybody because of the relationship with the family. Were you surprised that Dan didn't take the job and went back to UConn, or is this something you thought might may happen?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. First of all, the family, the Hurley family, just it's incredible, that legacy from their father, Bob Hurley Sr., iconic high school coach, maybe one of the greatest, if not the greatest high school coach of all time. Obviously, Bobby, what he did as a player in college and now coaching. But Dan, I mean, you know, Dan's probably the one guy that I don't know the best. I mean, I know Bobby. I know Mr. and Mrs. Hurley. I even know Bobby's sister, Melissa, because she was always around. She was little when we were having our run back in the early 90s. But I didn't know Danny that well. I've gotten to know him a little bit, you know, obviously during the last couple years during their tournament run. I was actually surprised that he was offered the job. And just because it felt like it came out of nowhere, like you didn't hear about it. It was kind of under the radar. And, you know, they made an offer. There was a flirtation. There was certainly some interest. But I'm actually glad he stayed in college. I think Dan Hurley would have had to change his approach, his demeanor, his style, if he was going to go into the NBA and have success. Watching him with his team, watching him coach, watching him in practice at the Final Four, it's comedy in some ways, but he's also like just very tough on his guys in a loving and an endearing way. Like he cares for his guys. He pushes them. He holds them to a standard and he does it in a way that really works in college. You know, Jim, as well as anyone, the college game is much different than the NBA game. 82 games. You're dealing with big personalities, guys making hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a give and a take, you know, and I don't know if he would have been able to be who he is in the NBA game. He would have had to adjust. And quite frankly, look, I like what he's doing at UConn. I like what he's building. I think he has a chance to have even more success. He's built a culture, a championship culture. But look, when the Lakers come calling and you have a chance at an iconic franchise to coach a LeBron James, you have to entertain that. Years ago, Coach K went through that. The Lakers came calling. They offered him a big contract. He had a chance to coach a younger Kobe Bryant then. And I think he flirted with it, but ultimately realized that Duke was right for him. And Dan has done the same thing, realizing UConn is the right place for him as well.
And I'd be remiss, too, if I didn't talk to you a little bit about Caitlin Clark, what's going on since you're the, you know, managing director of USA Men's Basketball. But mine is more so kind of the process in which it works, because it's almost like people say, well, you just throw on the team and she'll be fine, and you need the marketing, and you need this. But the women who have participated, whether that's the World Games or the previous Olympics, have gone through the process of making the team, of continuity, and just wanted to kind of get your take on it a little bit since you're involved with the men's side of USA Basketball.
Yeah, no, very fair question. And, you know, the men's team is different than the women's team. And the process of picking the Olympic roster is very, very different. Prior to 2006, when my predecessor, Jerry Colangelo, took over as the men's national team managing director, the team was selected by a committee. And that changed, and Jerry became the authority, the final say on picking and selecting the team. Now I've assumed that role, and our current roster I chose, obviously solicited input from others, but I was the one that had the final say on that. The women's process is much like it was pre-2006 for the men. There's a committee, and they've been given sort of what they're looking for in terms of players, the purview, if you will, what their responsibility is as a committee. And throughout the last couple of years, they have sort of mini camps that are part of the process or protocol, if you will. And so I know there was a lot of pressure. I know, obviously, Caitlin Clark, what she has done for the game, the college game, now the WNBA game, and I think women's basketball and men's basketball. I think she has the ability to inspire not just young girls, but young boys as well. She's that dominant, that talented, and has that kind of game that resonates. Controversial, indeed, I understand, and people have opinions, but I think the women who are on that committee are women who have given to the game, continue to give to the game, have been great ambassadors, have been in the WNBA. And I think understand the value and the impact that Caitlin Clark can and will have for women's basketball. But ultimately, their process was their process. And, you know, maybe as a result of this, they'll take a look at their process. Who knows what happens? But, I do feel that people are passionate either way about the ultimate decision. And I think that's good. I think passion is good. People care one way or the other. And I think that passion is what sells and that's what's marketable. So, that's what I know. I'm not as well versed on the process. You might know the process better than I do, but we have to respect it. And processes can change. They can be tweaked. And maybe they'll take a hard look at their process moving forward.
Good stuff, Grant. And before I let you go, listen, for the younger generation that don't understand how great you were, co-rookie of the year with a former teammate of mine in 95, which was Jason Kidd, pre-injuries. And I understand that, as well as anybody. And I always ask this, too, where we talk about the athletes, the players, what could have been. And you always say, well, we don't regret, we don't look back at it. Something didn't happen, but it did. But is there, from a career perspective, before I let you go, if you could go back and change time, and I'm not going to say a regret, if you could change something career-wise for you, what would it be?
It's a great question, and I appreciate, first of all, the compliment, the kind words. We played in a different era, and there's a distinction between being hurt and being injured when we played. Regardless, you were expected to play whether you were hurt or injured. That has changed now. Now we protect our investment. We, workload and rest. Rest management. What's the term?
Load management.
Load management, yeah, is a term that was non-existent back in the 90s. And I don't mind that. Like, I don't mind that at all. I'm one of the old guys that doesn't mind that, because I would have benefited if I had a team and an organization looking out for my best interest long term. So to answer your question, I think the one thing was I would have listened to my body. And, Otis Thorpe, who I was a veteran when I played in Detroit, won a championship with the Houston Rockets, a great teammate, a great leader. He used to tell me when I was young, your body talks to you. You just have to learn how to listen to it. And I didn't listen. I didn't trust my instincts. I didn't trust what my body was telling me. I was listening to the so-called experts. And it really derailed what had a chance to be a real special career and a real special trajectory from my first 6 years in the NBA. And so I don't have regret. I mean, I appreciate the struggle, as difficult as it was. I also appreciate coming back from the struggle and being able to play at the end of my career, a shell of myself, but still being able to play and appreciate, the privilege to play. But if I could go back, yes, I would listen to my body, trust my instincts, trust what my body is telling me. And maybe, maybe the injuries and all of that might have been much, much different if I had done so.
Jimmy, I'm glad you brought up how great Grant Hill was, because, you know, we're at a time now where kids nowadays, they're trying to erase Michael Jordan out of the record books, saying he wasn't the greatest of all time. And so we have someone, and Grant, what's up? How you doing, man? Someone like you, I grew up in that era of you and Jimmy. And to me, you're one of my greatest what ifs. If the ankle had not gotten hurt, we'd be looking at Grant Hill as one of the absolute greatest players of all time. So I'm glad you brought that up, Jimmy.
Wait. I'm not letting you off the hook like that, TJ. Oh,
okay. You're not.
Grant got something for you. TJ said your greatest accomplishment ever in life was?
Well, I mean, you won national championships and you were a great basketball player in the NBA and, you know, everything you've done post-basketball. But, Grant, let's be honest. The greatest accomplishment was you pulling Miss Tamina. I feel like there was a certain age, we knew. And we went, that Grant Hill's the man right there. Right? So, respect. Respect.
Hey, I appreciate that. And let's just say I was an overachiever. And, I overachieved with Tamia for sure.
Yeah, can you sing? Can you sing, Grant? You try sometimes. I see you posting stuff and you dancing. Are you a shower singer or do you sing in the studio with her sometimes? Or she say, Grant, get out of my face.
Yeah. Tamia says that I can't even sing in the shower. That's how bad I am. And sometimes when I try to sing, she's like, "Are you trying to be off key? Like you have to work to be off key." And and I'm like, no, babe, I can do it with ease. But now with her singing, you really don't even want to sing. You know, it's like, why should I even try to sing when, you know, she has a voice like that? She just, you don't even want to do karaoke with her. It's no fun.
Hey, Greg, does it get old? Are you like, man, I don't feel like hearing that today, man. That's just to me. That's, you know, does it?
Yeah, you know what's funny?
Be careful now. Be careful with this.
Yeah. No. So, she's obviously has a great voice, and like anyone, she's, you know, hears a song, she's always singing it, humming it. We could be in the kitchen, we could be in the car, you know, we could be just, you know, she could be in her closet and she's singing, and she's always singing. And sometimes you're like, hey, can I just think for a sec, like, but. But the most important thing, like, she's singing this song on the radio and she sounds better than the actual singer. And and so sometimes most of the time I do like, wow, like she's got an incredible voice. And how lucky is she that she was given that voice? Like, that voice is an instrument and she's protected it and she can still get out there and blow. And but yeah, I don't like doing karaoke with her. I don't like singing in her presence at all.
No, man. Sense. Thank you. Hey, Grant, I really appreciate it. Enjoy your time down there in Dallas. Hopefully we can get another game, because as basketball enthusiasts, we want to see more basketball, not less. And hopefully the Mavs can put something together. It's going to be a tough one to overcome the South Boston team. But enjoy it. Look forward to more coverage, man. And thank you for coming on.
I appreciate having me, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Grant.
Oh, man, that was great. I mean, just a lot of wealth of knowledge there.
Yeah.
With regards to, you know, Luka's situation. And to your point, TJ, with Grant Hill, it was at a point in his rookie year, second year in Detroit, where he was next up. Yeah. It was Grant Hill. Is he the next
Jordan?
Michael Jordan? Is he the next dominant player? And he was just scratching the surface of how good, because he was that point forward.
Yep.
Triple doubles.
6'8", handles
6'8", can handle. He was beginning to get his shot extended because he had that little pull-up crossover at the free throw line.
Explosive.
Explosive off the dribble. They would put Grant on the left-hand side of the court, let him go to work with that crossover, isolate him. But then it was this, the knowledge of the game.
Yeah.
And the injuries, i.e. a Penny Hardaway, cut that short, a Brandon Roy, of how, what is greatness. But he did say this, and I think this is the adversity that he had to go through, the learning aspect to continue to play, and then the appreciation later in his career when he was a shell of himself, but he was still able to contribute. Mm-hmm. He appreciated that a lot more.
I'm sure.
And we don't have regrets, but we do go back and say, oh, it's the what if. like, what if I didn't get hurt here, or I could have took care of myself a little bit more, where I could have been?
We'll never know, but Grant Hill was the man. So,
but I know you, Duke, you didn't care. You're East Coast guy.
Nah, I liked Duke as a kid. They had a player from Alaska where I was from.
Oh, Trajan?
Trajan Langdon, yeah. And then later Carlos Boozer. And so, you know, I followed Duke. I really enjoyed Grant Hill. And like you guys, I thought he was going to be top 10 all time when it was all said and done. You just look what he did in college. And it's just, you know, it's part of life, part of the sporting life that we live, that injuries take their toll and kind of derail certain careers, and you're forever
and rob us as fans.
Yeah, and you're forever left playing the what if game. And,
yeah,
and it's too bad that's with Grant, but
yeah,
but Grant, that was great with him.
No, he's awesome, man, and we appreciate him coming on and stay with us. We got to take a quick break, but come on back on the other side. Got a little bit more to talk about. We'll touch base a little bit more on the Mavericks and Celtics.
This Rich Eisen Show podcast is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states. Are you struggling to close deals? Business-to-business selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/direct. That is linkedin.com/direct for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/direct and get started.
I do believe it was the first time that we met. I'm going to bring this up. It was in the city of Houston.
That's right.
It was the first ever Super Bowl the NFL Network had ever covered. But you and the entire Manning family strolled into the Gatorade suite. And who did you hear singing karaoke in the Gatorade suite that night?
It was a beautiful voice.
Would you say, like, voice, in terms of
it was like an angel bringing us in. Mm-hmm. And there we walk in and we see Rich Eisen, karaoke. Dominating.
To basically, by the way, nobody else in the room, right?
Yeah, just solo. Just, you know, you get a little practice.
There was me and my buddy. There was nobody else.
What song, Eli?
That's a good question.
Sinatra.
Sinatra?
I forget which one it was.
Okay.
Well, you know, well, I mean, New yeah, York, did you New have York, to ask? Or,
yeah.
Seriously, it was me and my buddy. And
I remember we walked in and we joined now, but we joined right in.
You did sing, right? You I guys believe. All did get on
I think,
the mic.
I think we got up there, you know, we can't turn that down.
No, I know. And right. It was honestly me.
That was obviously like pre-cell phone, but no one had a camera. You didn't worry about anybody filming.
Yeah, so there's no video.
You get up and sing.
Anything,
you saw karaoke, you sang. You don't think twice.
It was just the moment.
Yeah,
that's
the
it.
Moment.
You didn't have to memorialize it. It was me, my buddy Doug, and then it was, I think, your entire family.
Yeah, probably
right?
The whole crew, yeah.
Your mom and your dad. You and Peyton and Cooper.
And Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. what do you have a go-to karaoke song, Eli?
at all?
It's changed over the years, obviously.
Has it really?
You kind of go with the times. You know, Footloose has always been one, you know, just because you can kind of dance with it. But now, you know, it's tough. It's tough to do karaoke now. You're just kind of worried, you know, people are filming all the time. That's then true. They judge. And, you know, I get judged enough. I don't need to be judged on my singing ability. That's, you know, that's for fun.
Yes.
Everybody's made it too serious.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show Desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. How about this? Talk a little football right now.
Let's do it.
And a little cha-ching. Former number one pick, Trevor Lawrence.
Yes, sir.
5-year extension, $275, right on par with what Joe Burrow signed on $275. Thoughts? $200 million, by the way, guaranteed. $200 million guaranteed.
Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie. You know, and it's one of those things, too, people say, well, the numbers, they're not winning. Your value is what your franchise is willing to pay you, what the market is. Yep. Okay, so whether you think it's worth it or not, Jacksonville felt he's worth it. And they worth it, meaning $200 million is guaranteed.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Anybody see this coming? I mean, it was obvious that they were going to extend the deal.
Unfortunately, we probably all saw this coming.
Just based on the signings.
Why unfortunately, though, Doug?
Yeah. Yeah, come on.
What has he done to earn this? What has he done? I must have forgot when Jacksonville made the Super Bowl the last couple of years. Joe Burrow's been a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow almost won the Super Bowl.
Well, what about Justin Herbert?
Again, I don't think.
I
don't think Herbert's worth that much. Lamar Jackson has two MVPs. Jalen Hurts been to a Super Bowl.
Almost won it.
Probably should have won it if not for a bad call.
The best player in the league
in the last decade isn't even on the list.
Yeah.
I think if you look at these guys, who are you taking first in a draft out of these six guys?
Oh, I'm stuck between Lamar and Joe.
Yeah.
Burrow. Me.
Yep.
Those, yep. I mean.
And that's two MVPs and a Super Bowl appearance.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Justin Herbert, but I mean, the guy's got a 500 career record, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris's thing, Joe.
Trevor Lawrence has the same stats as Gardner Minshew.
And they kind of ran Garden out of there, too.
What, right? what are we doing?
Chris's thing, Jimmy, is like he hates the way, and I get what he's saying, like the way these numbers are situated for these quarterbacks, and we're resigned to the fact that, like, all right, well, it's your turn, so you have to get this amount no matter what you've accomplished. So Chris's biggest problem is with that, like he just said, what has this guy done to deserve this amount of money? Today, I just had kind of just a different thought in mind. It's in 2 years, it's going to look like a great deal when quarterbacks are going to be getting, you know, $65 million dollar contracts. We talked before, Chris, about who's going to reach the $70 million number first. So I guess the way to look at it is, you know, this contract, it'll seem worthwhile in a few years when everyone else is just,
you know, Brock Purdy's going to get $90 million a year at this rate. And he's better than how many of the guys on that list?
Would you take Brock Purdy over Trevor Lawrence?
Here's the key word, deserve. That's the key word. Because whether you deserve something or not, we've seen a lot of times with somebody we felt didn't deserve or should deserve more and it hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. So if the franchise is willing to put their eggs in one basket based on the market, based on what they currently have, and say, this is our guy for the next 5 years, that's their valuation system.
Exactly. I'm not hating on the players. You know, get all the money you can, obviously.
Of course.
But teams don't have to do this. You don't have to build your roster this way.
You're the team. Trevor Lawrence's agent. Okay, you don't sign the extension. Not guaranteed to have him What do you do? What's your quarterback? Who's your quarterback in the future? You're going back in the draft? You go to Tank?
I mean, he's only played 3 years, so you could technically still have him for another 3 years. You can make him play. He's under contract for a fourth year.
Right.
Make him play out his fifth year. Then you can franchise him. You can franchise tag him the 30s. You still have 3 more years to make him, quote unquote, prove it. And yes, look, it's kind of the Jerry Jones way of doing business.
Yep.
The price does go up, but if he's not winning games, or maybe he gets unfortunately injured again, you could move on and go find someone else in the draft or sign someone in free agency. You end up saving yourself money, whereas you give him it all now, you're stuck. You're locked in. He's your guy for 5 years now.
But TJ's point, this deal may seem like a bargain 2 years from now. Let's say you don't sign him. You don't extend the money you want.
And
he improves so much. And that number now it's all congruent and all the salary cap will be a lot different 2 years from now.
Yeah, it's seemingly going up every year.
It's seemingly going up. But that money that he's going to command is also going up. So the question is, do you lock him in now?
Right.
At this number,
right.
Knowing
yesterday's pricing,
is going to be different.
And you're hoping that he's on a trajectory where he's improving the next few years. He is not maxed out as a player. He's not capped out his talent, his skills, his ability. You know, that's why I mentioned Jerry Jones. He's backed himself into a corner with Dak Prescott. Dak should walk into Jerry's office and be like, look, 65, 70 million. That is the start of this conversation.
Big time.
The geniuses in all of this are the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
They somehow convinced Patrick Mahomes to sign this 10-year, $450 million deal that now looks like, I mean, that's like pocket change now. That's $5 compared to all these guys.
Would they have all that jewelry if he hadn't? Because that money they saved allowed them to obviously re-sign and pay other players. Yep. So now you got to look at, if he would have been greedy and went for that big bag, does that change
the
makeup?
No, it was the big bag back then. The cap wasn't what it is now. He signed this 3 years ago.
Yeah, but we were still kind of, I think, at that point, we're like, yeah.
But still, when he signed it, it was like, it was number one. I mean, it was a lot.
But he was number one. He's now gone from 1 to 10.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But if you're from a leverage perspective, just think about it this. As a young player, and this happens in basketball, they say, well, why do you leave college after 1 year when maybe you may not be an NBA prospect or because you want to get to that second contract.
Right.
You want to get through the 3-year period of your rookie deal when the team has an option. You want to get to that next contract. So when you're in your 20s, you can have two contracts big time. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing here with Trevor. You signed this early, a 5-year extension on the back end of what he's in now. He's still relatively young for that next deal. If he's on the projection where we think he's going to be, the team is, you get another big contract. So it's strategic on both. So I understand both sides of from the franchise perspective of trying to lock in and get him at today. But from a player and agent perspective, you want to have as many contracts as you can while he's in his growth period and before he reaches his maturation point where he can't get it. And that's the tug of war. And in today's world, with the way TV money works, back in the day, you know, early in my career, the TV money wasn't there. So you based a lot of the salary cap around ticket sales, merchandise, parking, suite sales. Those things really influenced what the market was, what you could pay players, what the salary cap. Once TV came into it nationally and internationally, hey, sometimes you'll see stadiums that aren't sold out, but owners are still making money.
Oh, yeah.
So the TV money influenced so much more, and it's continuing to grow. Look at what the NBA has done with their $7 billion TV, going from 2.7 to 7 billion, I think it is.
Crazy.
You know, 11-year deal coming up. But that's where, and you got to understand, like in basketball, you say, well, how did this player get paid this money? Why did he get paid? It seemed like he's overpaying. Well, it's a penalty when you don't pay 90% of the salary cap. Somebody has to get the money. So who you choose to give it to, depending on who's free agent at that time or who you can get in to come in or who you're retaining as a free agent and signing is very important. Joe Johnson, I remember he signed a big deal in Atlanta. I was like, well, why would you pay him? that much because he's a star. You're not going to get another player like that. So the timing was perfect for Joe. Not that he didn't deserve it, but they had to pay. No, Reggie Jackson, I think, got a big deal in Detroit. Why'd you pay? What he had to pay. And football is the same kind of thing in regards to the salary cap and locking in a big-time quarterback for the future.
Also, quarterback, it's not like you can just go plug another guy in at quarterback.
You can't.
It's the toughest position out there. So you get a guy, you almost have to run with him unless he's just awful. Because it's tough to play this position. Mm. So you got to lock your guy up.
True.
Yeah. And you got to stick with him, unfortunately, for better or for worse. I shouldn't say unfortunately, but for better or for worse, you got to stick with him.
Well, great, great conversation. We're going to take a short break here.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Where'd the nickname Showtime come from?
It was my godfather, Troy Hawkins. Him and my dad, but really him. They would watch me play, and I would make the diving plays and stuff like that in baseball. And they said it was Showtime when I was on the field. And so they always used to call me Showtime, especially my godfather, LaTroy.
LaTroy Hawkins. That is a name I have not heard in a while.
Yeah.
Okay, Patrick. Look, I appreciate you calling in here greatly. And I appreciate the text exchange that I had with you the other day where you were gentle in rejecting my suggestion to give you a new nickname of the Patrol. I really appreciate that, Patrick.
it was a good idea. I just kind of was playing down the nicknames as much as possible at that point.
So it's okay. Great. So you're
whatever
saying
it works for you.
No, hold on a second. You're saying that it's not a judgment on the actual creativity of the nickname. It's just you attempting to be humble, tamping down any of the accolades right now because you're focused on winning. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, just for me in general, I mean, it's all about the football. It's all about the team. And so I know that the nicknames are a cool thing to do with social media and everything that's around right now. But for me, it's all about just being a teammate and someone that's just a part of this organization and a part of a team that wants to win.
So if you had an ego, let's put it in a box here. You have an ego. You don't care about being humble at all. You're just pounding your chest. Nickname of the Patrol. Do you like it? Be honest.
I don't know. There's been so many nicknames that have came out lately, and I'm just going to kind of keep it at just Patrick right now.
You're being polite. I like it.
Yeah, thank you, though. I appreciate it.
Fellas, not going to lie.
Please don't.
Big game tonight.
Really?
Might hop on a plane.
And?
What?
And I don't have tickets currently, but
I'll hook you up.
With Game Time and GameTime.co, I can get tickets anywhere, anytime, for anything, and I might need them tonight in Dallas. I go to the Game Time app. I see where my seat is. The all-in pricing. It's perfect. What, like, what would be the perfect seat? And see, I can use Game Time to find the perfect seat where the most amount of confetti would fall onto my face and into my lap at a certain, you know, like at the 2.5 hour mark of the game when the fun. You get what I'm saying?
I feel you.
I think you talked yourself into
it. I love the Game Time app, and I think I might actually use it tonight if I end up in Dallas. Game Time takes all the guesswork out of buying finals tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code RICH. I'll spell it out for you guys. R-I-C-H, real simple name. Oh, it's got four letters, like the number of wins the Celtics are going to have come later tonight. And you get $20 off your first purchase. I'll say it again. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code R-I-C-H, and there's $20 off. Terms apply. Obviously, visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create the account. The redeem code is R-I-C-H. Four letters, like the amount of games it's going to take the Celtics to win the NBA Finals. And you get $20 off your first purchase. All the confetti, Jim, right on my head. That's where it happens, in your old arena. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price. Guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Well, hold up. Wait a minute. I'm going on AA.com right now. Let's see.
What do we got? What's
LAX.
Yep.
LAX
to Dallas.
Dallas.
Can I get back in time for my tea time Saturday morning?
So, no. Here's the thing. You lose a couple hours now.
I know. It's central time.
You got to take that into consideration. We're going to jump on this and see if we can get you on a plane.
Can I get it?
Around.
You know what I mean?
Two-ish, maybe.
Yep. Get me there right around tip.
Yeah, get there. It's about a 3-hour flight. Yep. So I think we're going to get you
there.
It'll be close. Now, you got to secure the ticket. Once you get there, I got you taken care of. Ooh. I can call my people down in Dallas. They can, escort you.
And, that's what I'm saying. Can I sit on the bench?
No. On whose bench? That's the question. I know you want to sit on the Celtics bench. I know that, right? Huh? If you could get a flight and I could get you to sit on the bench, how tempted would you be?
Do I get to cheer?
Of course. You said it's going to be probably a lot more Boston fans.
I got to say, Mark Spears said expect a lot of green tonight in the house.
Oh, bruh. Sorry. 4:40. Don't get into 9:49.
No.
But what you can do.
I'll be there for the celebration.
Since you're big time, jump on that PJ, bro.
Oh.
it's
big baller.
It's big baller.
I got to think about it.
You got peeps, though, right? I can get you on, right?
Of course.
You got friends that got.
No
the
doubt.
The best thing about having a yacht.
I got friends.
And a plane. It's friends who have them.
Friends who have them. I don't want them. Nope. Hey, speaking of the rings, the Celtics are about to win tonight. Did you see Kansas City? The Chiefs got theirs last night. The third ring for Patrick Mahomes and company. Look at this. Got the game-winning play from overtime on the inside. This is a new thing, right?
Yeah.
Who started this? The top screws off and there's stuff on the inside?
Yeah, right.
Who was the first team? Was it the Rams?
I want to say Jason Arashib, and Jason's of Beverly Hills, I think, was the first person who made the rings so you could take them off and make medallions out of them if you needed to.
Oh, yeah,
to.
So you can wear Jason like the top right here and the ring, the rest of it.
I want to say he was the first
person
to do
these
this.
These Chiefs rings, I was watching some of the videos last night. They are filthy. They're so nice.
You know, they said there was an error in the ring, though. They have all the teams that they played, and they have – this is so minor. It's like
Miami
is the seventh seed, and they weren't.
Miami was the sixth seed. Pittsburgh was the seventh
seed. But guess what? Who cares?
I guess.
You spend that kind of money.
Fix.
You spend that kind of money.
Yeah, but it's on the inside of the ring. It's not on the outside. I'm not tripping. I'm not tripping.
Attention to detail. Everything matters, especially when you're paying for it.
I love that the game-winning play from overtime is on the inside.
Yeah, these rings are dope.
Awesome. All right, somebody beat them next year.
Steelers, baby. Here we come. Next year.
Jim, since you're here in the next hour, not going to do it now. We got to play win-loss. Steelers,
oh,
Jim,
absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Got to play the win-loss game.
I'm pumped right now. Quarterback situation.
So you're happy. You're into
it.
You're into Russ.
Because he doesn't have to be great. He has to be good.
Okay.
Black and gold.
Black and gold, baby.
That was my point.
Is he still good?
I think he's still good. You got Pickens still back there.
Right, yeah.
You know, but
you got Najee and Jalen.
They don't need him to go.
Trent Dilfer wasn't great.
Fire move.
He managed the game.
And he didn't put the defense in
situations where they were giving up the field a lot because of turnovers.
Yeah.
So, and he's, when you do that and you're able to manage that, and I think Russell is at a point of his career where he understands that. And come on, Mike Tomlin, did you sign him to an extension?
I know.
Come on. Come on. It's setting up for us this year. Us. It's setting up for us this year to make some noise. Kansas City, I love you. You held it down while we were growing, but now we're back. We're.
You're back, baby.
We're back.
Yeah. French.
Right. I love when we use
we.
We. We. Everybody uses we. The Celtics don't pay me. I say we every time.
Well, call the Celtics and have them fly you down.
they really should.
So you don't can get know? There.
Put me next to Portnoy, courtside. Come on. The best thing did you see Dave Portnoy tweeted at Cuban? Us.
I did.
What'd he say?
He asked where the best place to party in Dallas is tonight.
Jemele Hill coming up.
Coming up. My girl.
Every story eventually comes to an end. This June, hear the final episode of season 2 of the hit podcast series, In the Red Clay, Durham. In the Red Clay tells the unbelievable true story of Billy Sunday Burt, the most dangerous man in Georgia history. In the podcast that people are calling riveting, incredibly moving, captivating, and addicting. Binge seasons 1 and 2 of In the Red Clay now, wherever you listen.